And welcome to Blotter Briefs, Teehee Briefs, a daily short shot I started doing in order to cut into the backlog of true crime. And it's a good thing I picked this week to start, because could every damn podcast give us a damn minute the last few days? I feel like I've done nothing but listen to it every single second when I'm not watching baseball. Anyway, to the topic at hand, counselors in my chambers for... Someone Knows Something, Season 5, somehow. The Crime, from the CBC's piece on the new season. The unsolved rape and killing of 15-year-old Carrie Ann Brown, whom horseback riders found dead 2 days after she had disappeared from a house party, continues to haunt her family 3 decades after the devastating loss. Quote, "Someone could have just dropped a nuclear bomb on us. It wouldn't have been any worse," her brother Trevor Brown told Someone Knows Something host David Ridgen. The story. Someone Knows Something is an acquired taste. The CBC podcast premiered in 2016 with an investigation of the disappearance of 5-year-old Adrian McNaughton in 1972. True crime fans immediately became preoccupied with it, partly because even 2.5 short years ago, there wasn't nearly the wealth of choice in genre pods that we have today, and partly because Ridgen is, well, a lot of people find his narrative style annoying. I am one of those people. Ridgen's voice, the aural experience of listening to him, is actually quite lovely. His accent is flavorful, but also authoritative. Sort of in the way that a BBC announcer's accent could probably make you believe, just from its baked-in clout, that Big Rock Candy Mountain is a real place, with, like, senators and whatnot. Ridgen's writing is a bit of a struggle. I broke up with SKS midway through season 2 because the episodes were too long. Lots of audio footage of feet crunching on leaves, pinging of "your keys are still in the ignition" from rental cars, and many, many self-satisfied descriptions of canebrake, dented trucks, and other aspects of day-to-day blue-collar existence in the frozen north that reminded me of a Times profile of regretful Trump voters, which is to say not just superfluous, but more than a little condescending. Little has improved in that regard, and while Ridgen does appear to have a talent for picking compelling stories, people, not for nothing, by families and RCMP reps with their own talent for storytelling, he's still not able to stay out of his own navel at times.
Trevor is tall, in jeans, with long graying brown hair, and wearing a royal blue hockey hoodie for the Buffalo Sabres. He looks like a country western star a few records past his prime. He's soon joined by Jim, his father, who's wearing a clean shirt and smiling dourly with pale skin and a soft handshake.
Like, you know how I sometimes say that some true crime shows like 48 Hours might work better as podcasts because on the visual side, you're just seeing the same 5 out-of-focus wedding photos over and over again? This is that, except this should just be written. If you want to write for Maclean's or The New Yorker, do that. Doesn't necessarily need to be an audio story. And as an audio story, it's rather inefficient. There is something lovely, though, about some of the moments early in season 5, about Carrie Ann Brown's brother contemplating, even taking comfort in, the idea that the natural world is literally holding his and his sister's pain in the body, in the form of long-lived birds like ravens who might remember what happened and who perpetrated it. But then Ridgen has to kind of ruin it with his pious intonations. In the second episode, there's a sequence in which he relates that he's got access to the crime scene photos, but is bound to describe them only and is not allowed to republish them. And he feigns regret at this development, but you can tell that Ridgeon, of all people, would be thrilled at, quote, having to write them up instead of show them, and, quote, having to hyper-detail the dumped furniture and overgrown botanicals in the photos. If he would just get out of the way and let the people in the story tell the story, like the long-haul trucker, Donna, who made the discovery of Carrie Ann's body over 30 years ago that haunts her to this day, and who did just, frankly, what I think I would do if confronted with, as it were, the fact of a body.
I talked to her the whole time. She deserved respect. I talked to her, and I was so angry. And once I knew she was gone, I said, look, I'm going to go get help. I hate to leave you, but I'm going to go get help. And I said, I'm so sorry this has happened to you. I'll see they pay. And that was a bad thing to say because I feel like I let her down.
Or Carrie Ann's friend, carrying the guilt of physically losing her bestie after over 3 decades.
I was the last person that loved her to see her. When somebody goes missing and you were their last person and then you have to go to their family and say you couldn't find them, and you have a hard time putting that one to bed. And I know, like, it wasn't my fault. I didn't do it. I was a kid. You didn't know any of that was going to happen, but you relive those moments.
This is an affecting story, to be sure, and I don't doubt David Ridgeon's motives. He's trying to tell a moving story, and he's trying to get answers for Carrie Ann Brown's family. The problem, I think, is that he's trying so hard, with the sophomore workshop notes on the quality of the cloud cover, etc., and it makes the narrative harder to follow, to keep track of which friends knew what, and which neighbor's house looked onto which boat slip, and what have you. At 40 minutes, with fewer cluttery notes on Trevor Brown going back into the kitchen for a fresh beer, it might have better momentum. As it is, I don't think that's what Ridgeon's after, and I have no problem with the true crime prose poem in theory. In practice, the poetry needs to be better than this, and not this fish nor fowl situation where the literaritude of the writing is working against the pacing of the mystery. I mean, look, I'm just some asshole who makes underpants jokes in the title of her true crime review podcast. But it isn't March of 2016 anymore. Back then, there were like 5 true crime podcasts that didn't sound like they were recorded in a windy carport by a drunk guy. Someone knows something isn't bad, but in an age of peak crime pod, it's not essential either. I don't know if I'm going to continue with it. I'd love to hear from you guys about whether you knew that it was up to season 5, whether you're going to take a crack at season 5, let me know. For more information on all of the seasons of Someone Knows Something, Google CBC SKS. Do you know something about what you want me to review next? Email me at bunting@the-blotter.com or find me on social media. That's Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. And if you become a Patreon tipster, you'll get to listen to and choose mini episodes I don't send to Gen Pop. That page is patreon.com/blotterpresents. Thanks for listening to Blotter Briefs, Teehee Briefs. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm always prepared to rule.